Welcome to the Resource People Podcast, presented to you by Australian Resources and Energy Group, AMA. The Resource People Podcast brings to life the stories behind the people, workforces and companies of our great industry.
Welcome to Resource People Podcast. For this episode, it's absolutely fantastic to be joined by Tom Quinn. Tom is the Group Executive Director at Ventia and the AMA President, I might add. And many of you will know Tom Quinn for his years at Jacobs and most recently as Broad Spectrum. So a really fascinating chat today with Tom about such a broad range of things. But I think the theme for today is the kind of essential services that go on behind the resources and energy industry, and indeed making that industry tick, as well as a whole range of other industries. I think you'll get a lot out of this episode. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to Resource People Podcast, Tom.
Hi, Tara. Great to be here.
Wonderful. Could you start by telling us about your background and your role at Ventia?
Sure. Thanks, Tara. Of course, joined Broad Spectrum 4 years ago after a career working for major service companies around the world in Fluor and Aqua Caverna and Jacobs here in Australia, as well as in Asia and North America and other places. Joined as the head of resources in Broad Spectrum and then became the CEO 2 years ago. And of course, we've now just merged with Ventia, and in that role in the merged business, I've taken up the role of a group executive.
Wonderful. And that merger was completed at the end of June this year. Can you tell us a bit about Ventia, what it does, where it operates, and how many people it employs?
Yeah, certainly. Ventia, of course, by bringing Broad Spectrum and Ventia together, we really bought two very similar companies in terms of size of work. The full scale of the business, it's greater than a $5 billion per annum business and nearly 40,000 people across Australia and New Zealand. We tag ourselves and look at ourselves as an essential services company. So supporting utilities, oil and gas and energy sector, the resources sector generally, defence and a lot of social infrastructure work as well as transport and roads and rail.
Wow. And obviously going to get on to asking you about being an essential services organisation through what's been a really challenging year. But I'd like to talk a little bit more about their merger to start with. What kind of opportunities and challenges have you realised and identified as part of the merger?
It's interesting. The balance is much more on the opportunities side. We've realised the sheer scale of what the business is together by bringing it together. The two businesses came together quite complementary. A very good plan done prior to the 30th of June in terms of how to integrate the two businesses, decide how the business lines would work. It's a very sector business-led, business and with the supporting functions. So all that type of design and structure fitted well. So the two companies came together quite well. And, of course, our customers have accepted and seen this as a real opportunity for us to leverage across that broader business. Challenges are clearly around in the scale of what happened. And again, planning was great. We used a lot of what we call a power of 10 conversations, bringing broader groups together. So we all understood what was going on and we were able to help with people understand to go through. So it was important for us to make sure the operating side of the business was unaffected. So most of the merger and the activities and the challenges were occurring in the supporting functions, and we had to move quickly through those to be able to deal with it.
Can you tell any of our listeners that may not be aware of that method that you talked about, the power of 10? Can you tell us what that is?
It's more that even if you have a task to do and a challenge to do, is to bring people from further aside. So a very inclusive style conversation. You bring 10 people together or bring a number of people together who have different thoughts and different decisions. And we even operate that at the executive level. So our daily meeting is a group of people supporting the CEO just to talk on broad range of topics to help advise and speed up decisions that we need to get through given the scale of what's gone on.
Sounds like a really kind of forced way to think about who else can be involved and who would have a different perspective. And you just touched on the leadership group, and really from your perspective, from a leadership perspective, you wouldn't be a stranger to mergers and acquisitions and joint ventures and the like in the kinds of amazing roles that you have. But what do you think is key to, you know, really leading the business and really importantly the workforce smoothly through what can sometimes be a real period of uncertainty?
Yeah, the important element is to keep the operation stable. So any of our customer-facing people, to make sure they understood that they can keep operating as they are, that they can keep getting supported the way they need to be and can keep doing what they need to do to deliver to our customers. And then this is critical, of course, in a business like ours of essential services. And then it's important to communicate a plan, phase that plan so we don't overload the organization, but be very clear and succinct and update people as we go in a very regular and frequent manner.
And is that a personal style of yours in terms of that frequency of engagement and communication, or is it something you really have to schedule and plan out?
Given the scale of the organisation, you definitely schedule and plan out. But it's also very important from a personal point of view because you're actually looking for feedback. It was a big plan, a lot of things and a lot of people involved, and therefore we needed feedback all the time. So there was a lot of informal feedback and touch points as well to do that.
And like all things 2020, we touched on the timeframe for the merger of the two organisations, but of course, back bang in the middle of COVID-19 in terms of restrictions here in Australia. How did that affect the merger? And were there any things in particular that you haven't seen happen in mergers before, or are there things that you learnt from by doing it over this period?
At the start, there was in March timeframe, when we really started to become aware of the scale of the COVID-19 pandemic. There was that touch point, well, what do we do? Do we continue with the sale? Can we continue with the sale? Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. We were able to keep our business operating, and therefore why not continue? So we did. Mm-hmm. And I think the two companies work well. It was probably more of a challenge with third parties that we needed to work with that, sort of government agencies and other, as they reorganized themselves and got themselves all good to work in COVID. We learned a lot about what you can do, as everybody has, by frequent communication over Zoom and Teams and else like that. And see, in some ways that helped because it took away the travel time. Mm. So we're all busy spending hours and hours in team meetings, but we weren't spending hours in airports and travel. And we've reflected since that we would have done this on a huge roadshow style, traveling from place to place, communicating and talking. But we found by the acceptance of this mode of communication in terms of Teams and virtual, both by customers and by our people, we're able to cover a lot more ground quickly and meet more frequently, meet more for shorter periods of period. We weren't investing the travel time. That was a big change.
Especially on fatigue and the kind of scheduling things that challenges that would throw up. But everyone's talking about how 2020 has really forced that kind of change of people working kind of more virtually and meeting and communicating more virtually, and lots of positives. There's also quite a bit of fatigue around that at the moment. So it's really interesting hearing you reflect on the kind of speed and nimbleness it enabled you to undertake through that process.
Yeah, and there's certainly a hunger to get back together. And so I think we'll value those face-to-face meetings as they start occurring, as Australia and New Zealand start unlocking in the next months to come. So we're ready for it. I think what helped a lot was that we had a good plan to start with and we're able to follow that. I think planning would be a harder exercise to do in a virtual sense, but enacting is probably assists in the speed just because you can be very focused, but we're ready for face-to-face too.
There's a lot of anticipation, especially as we head into the Christmas period. People are keen to see people they haven't seen for some time. Mm. And this is kind of a very specific question because from what I understand, Ventia and Broad Spectrum generally offered different types of services with minimal overlap in a number of industries. And you touched on some in oil and gas, but also defence, justice, education, social housing. The list goes on, and you touched on the opportunities before. What does that mean for your people in terms of bringing together all of these opportunities, all of these different segments from a personal development, from a technical development and career pathway opportunity for all the people in what was Broad Spectrum but now Ventia?
Yeah, it's interesting. We're definitely in that phase of realising that opportunity now. So, pre-sale, both sides of the sale were sort of wondering what life would be like and wondering about probably security of their role in the new business and going forward. So all of that was sort of in their mindset. And once we got together, we realized the complementary nature of the businesses. There was a huge scale for a business to grow. For customers that, if I take a Broad Spectrum example in defense, where we were, have huge contract for us, a huge amount of work for us, and yet we didn't do a lot of things in defence that could be done in terms of the telco and the communication side of which is a strength of Ventia. So those elements of that suddenly became apparent to us as we were doing these cross-business discussions and strategy discussions. There was a whole pile of opportunities like that in our transport sector, even though the two businesses probably from a distance look very similar. They had different approaches about how to go to that market, particularly the roads market, and we've seen that help us a lot.
Yeah, wow. So people sitting in your organisation after being through the merger, people are now starting to turn their attentions probably to the opportunities that are available to them, which is great news.
And also further opportunities in one of the things that Broad Spectrum brought to the merger was a fairly mature operating platform in the SAP-based and the procurement-based tools and the other elements that we had that enable us for us to sort of scale up. We've doubled the scale of the business effectively, and yet the platform we have is sufficient for that. So there's a lot of excitement and opportunities that we see in how we can scale up the business and bring the Ventia part of the business in very rapidly. The speed at which it's happened is astounding, actually.
Well, talking about speed, and it may be too soon to ask you this question, but one of the things with such a large workforce and so many opportunities, have you started to think about or even start to plan or realise some of that increased scale and investment in areas such as career development, professional development, innovation and technology in terms of how you approach such a large workforce?
We actually see it's an opportunity for us to do that because we can do it on scale. So we can bring remote technologies. People talk about drones. People talk about operating systems that we can start to leverage. Both organisations had operating centres. We had one in Parramatta in terms of a contact centre, management centre, and there was one in the telco business in Ventia in Melbourne. So between the two of those, we're starting to look for synergies for those, and if one group had a more advanced technology or process, how we can bring that across. We also see that some of the environmental investments that both businesses had in terms of soil remediation, in monitoring water tables and water flow, we're bringing those sorts of things and taking them to other customers, and therefore they become more broadly attractive. Some of the elements of the remote measuring that we've done on high voltage power, we're now taking to other sectors where that's got relevance as well. So it's certainly, we think that the innovation through investment in technology and digitizing our work is something we can accelerate. And so we've actually invested with a separate group on digital solutions that brings together what all the two organisations are doing under one banner so we can get more momentum on it and drive that as a digital platform to do our work.
That's really exciting. And I'm going to take you back a little bit now. And don't worry, I've got more Ventia-based questions. But I'm going to take you back now to Broad Spectrum and the role that I know that Broad Spectrum play and a role that was somewhat of an unsung hero during the horrific bushfire season very early this year and late last year. Can you give an overview of Broad Spectrum's role during this really terrifying and trying time?
Well, certainly from the point of view of our support of the defence services is that we had to mobilise very rapidly in all sorts of things in terms of even just looking after the defence people who were deployed in terms of the food, clothing, but also the defence bases were used as accommodation bases. So there was a ramp up of who could there. So volunteer workers, other essential services that use the defence bases to go out into the community and work. And, of course, we're the firefighting provider for the defence bases themselves. So our defence firefighting teams were on full alert. Their main mission is to look after the base. It's not to fight fires in the community, and they will help where they can. But in some cases, and the Albatross base, that base was twice surrounded by fire and they had to work.
Where's that Albatross base, Tom?
It's near Nowra. So it was twice in a few days it was under attack from the fires. So they had to fight the fire off, protect the base, which they were successful in doing, thank goodness. And so it's one instance. But then also we're the refueler for many of the aircraft for defence. So those bases were being used by the firefighting air fleet. So we provided support for them. And I guess the other thing we were able to do is we help with some of the logistics of balancing out the defence bases that were busy in terms of firefighting or supporting firefighting efforts nearby. We were able to bring people from other defence bases, but of course have a logistics overview that we didn't leave a base vulnerable if the situation changed and they had to defend that base as well. So it was a very busy time.
My mind is just boggling on the degree of different aspects and elements that Broad Spectrum operate in terms of support and work with its clients in this space. How did you on earth operationalize what must have been a very quickly changing time? You know, just even in terms of, you said the word ramp up a few times, like, did you have to deploy additional people into different spaces? How did you guys operationalize something that was not being a military organization yourself, but providing essential services to military?
I guess we're very lucky that we have got to cooperative relationships with Defence and other government entities, that we're able to work together how best to use the resources we had, either balance them out of where they are or bring them from others. So if we could bring them from another state and to support Victoria and New South Wales, which were at the peak of the fire, we're able to do that and make sure that our leadership teams are mobilised to the right places and the right people, that they have the experience to be able to work in this. So we have that base structure in place and ability, and then we can support it from the wider organisation. We can leverage some of the assets we have in terms of our contact control centre to help us through that. And I mentioned earlier about our procurement group, who is really just a well set up ability to leverage that to grow quickly is quite high. So we can secure other services from other people very rapidly through the arrangements we have there. So it's about being able to tip into all those things and bring them together. You know, even just simple things like buying mattresses. So, the eSale base in Victoria was a base for community essential services to work from. So we were able to procure mattresses, convert the gym into a dormitory, the laundry, and of course the mess and other things.
Yeah.
You double up with takeaway meals that could be taken to the fire fronts and other elements. So are all things that are in place in a sort of a plan, but then infrastructure is quite good between ourselves and our customers to be able to grow that.
A definite shout out to everybody that did that work. I mean, as you say, the infrastructure's all there. People go about doing their job and are trained to do these and have these sorts of responses, you know, and have the structure in your organization to have these responses. But then they've got to call on all that when it's needed. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was quite amazing. And of course, they all took it in their stride.
Like you do too, hearing you talk about it. And it's no stranger. Bushfires, the resources and energy industries, particularly in Australia, particularly affected by cyclones and any kind of weather incident. So, yeah, what you're describing, albeit maybe not necessarily specific to bushfire, is something that a lot of people, our listeners, will get a lot from in terms of thinking about how they respond and their organisation's preparedness in these circumstances.
And it comes to some of the backbone. We have so many people deployed across Australia, tens of thousands of people deployed. So our logistics of supporting them either through procurement or shipping things to them in the resources sector is a very good example. Our Eastern World Drilling business is a masterful logistics business at the same time.
Yeah, and, you know, just I said a shout out before, but hopefully those people in procurement know how important they are, even compared to people who may be even manning those fire crews on those defence facilities. So I'm sure they do, but absolutely incredible.
It was, yeah.
I want to just ask a couple of things about that. And are there things that you as an organisation, I know that Australia as a country, the government, you know, policies, even things down to how fundraising's done, there's been a lot of learnings as a nation out of this every time we have bushfires, but there seems to have been a lot out of this last stage. Any learnings that you always take out of these circumstances or anything that, you know, surprises you?
There's sort of basic technical things that everybody, when I visited the firefighters at Nowra, at Albatross, and asked them about the events and they showed me around and gave me the rundown of the days, the few days that they, and they were sort of mostly complimentary about their equipment and understood it. Of course, they sort of said, "But we're firefighters. This is what we do."
Yeah.
But they certainly came up with things that they changed in their approach as professional firefighters. So yeah, they sort of learnings there. There was learnings when I visited the East Sale Base post that. And they talked about the hospitality groups in supporting it, and they probably didn't understand that, you know, the people coming to stay were basically coming off the fire ground in their sleeping and eating and going straight back. So
wow.
How do they manage those people who are different than the people who might be staying there more long term and have access to, you know, showers and change of clothes and other things like that? So there's probably an element of that realization as a huge volume of people who really are only there for a very short period of time, really to eat and sleep and leave again. and of course had no other, and they might not come back again. They might be elsewhere the next day.
Incredible. And that really leads me to the question of talking about rapid change that everybody has really experienced in 2020, but what learnings or what elements of how you have always operated as a business really either prepared you for or assisted you to, you know, move through this COVID-19, particularly with all the border restrictions and the personal hygiene and safety restrictions in place?
Yeah, given the scale of our business, of course, and the breadth of it, we have a very formal incident management process. So it was very obvious early on in COVID. In fact, as early as February, we started that process at a very low level, sort of like a watching level. And so by the time we got to mid-March, we were fully ramped up to that. And that really is a process where you bring key people for different capabilities across the business together to operate as a project team in, you know, incident management and say, what are the things that we have in the business that we need to prioritize to support us? What are the things we don't have? And then how do we do that? And then how do we get the business? So they become the help for the rest of the business. And there were some really good examples. Some of the people that were, you know, were key to that were people who had come out of those, some of those emergency responses in there and also in some of the other activities we've done in the past. And they were able to bring that skill and that calmness to say, well, things will change. Mm-hmm. And also the early days of COVID-19, it was the rapidness of change and understanding that we were growing about what it was going to be and how it would affect us, the rapid change in how the governments, both state and federal, were putting things in place to manage it and how we had to react to that. And we also took a view that back to the essential services, not deliver the service. You might remember the start that there was supply issues in grocery stores and things. We couldn't afford to have that because of the essential nature of who we work for. So we were very focused on making sure that, similar to the bushfires, that we could deliver. So what do we need to do to deliver? But at the same time, what do we need to do to make sure everybody is, their welfare is looked after? So it was that sort of principles and that structure that was brought together very quickly. And we built a lot of things to help the people at the time very rapidly because we were able to do that.
Incredible. I've probably got a million other questions about COVID-19, but I'm sure, you know, everyone's getting a little bit fatigued talking about it. I might take a little bit of a change in tack now and talk to you about diversity inclusion, because I know that you're a champion and do so much in every role that you've had. But tell me a little bit about Ventia's approach to diversity inclusion. Is it different to Broad Spectrums? Has it been a meeting of two aligned organisations in that regard? Love to hear about it.
Look, it's certainly a meeting of the minds. I think that's true in almost most things we've covered in the merger, but absolute meeting of minds in terms of diversity and inclusion. Look, it's the industries we're in, it's the customers we're in, it's the people we employ. Yeah, we employ such a large group of people that just their energy around the need for diversity and inclusion makes it a priority for us as a business. It approaches some changes. So we've formed what we've called a sustainability council, which I'm the chair of. Mm-hmm. And that's to deal with certainly resource issues in terms of the environment. It's to deal with governance issues in terms of what's the appropriate governance for a business like ours. And the other leg of that is the people and how do we build the sort of organisation and act in the right way that people want to be part of. And diversity and inclusion is a key element of that. Doing a lot of the things that you might see it typically is in setting targets and goals as we grow the business and make this a better place. And so we're doing those. We're looking at very much started some work on looking at job types within the business. So you could sort of, if you rounded out a classification of a work group of people working in offices and white collar. So there's a sort of a way to manage diversity in that, whether it be gender diversity and other elements. But then if you start talking about specific jobs that we have where people work shift work or they work that's probably very difficult to do for 10 or 12 hours a day unless you're physically strong. So how do we change some of the ways that works? And we've been able to have a little bit of an insight in, we can change the profile of the workforce by changing the way we design their jobs in the workforce.
The fundamentals of the work. Wow, that's fantastic. And, you know, I want to note that Tom and I are recording this podcast in the middle of NAIDOC week. So I'm sure Tom joins me in acknowledging Indigenous and traditional owners of the land in which we initiate these podcast recordings. And I know that Indigenous employment is a passion of yours. You may want to talk about that, but also more broadly, you know, where to from here as a leader, your diversity inclusion journey, but also Ventia's.
Our challenge is that today's normal is not tomorrow's normal. So we have to keep raising the benchmark. And in the case of Indigenous community, and you know, we work hard at employment programs that are tailored for Indigenous people. We've been able to raise our Indigenous employment to somewhere between 5% and 6% of our workforce in Australia. It's been a...
Can I just pause there? Because, you know, that's only 1%, but we're talking about extremely large business. So what's 15% for other people wouldn't even be your 1%. So congratulations.
But that's done through a lot of work in making our place a place that Indigenous people want to work in. It's the way we approach the bringing people on in recruitment. It's the way we build a culture that's safe for Indigenous people, that they feel safe involved, the way we listen and learn. And also we push them very hard in cultural awareness so that those of us who don't come from Indigenous backgrounds can increase our awareness and our touch points. And we'd like to see this get to a stage where we created an environment that's very attractive to Indigenous people to be in, but also we enjoy being in that, you know, our cultural awareness and strengths, and this is what NAIDOC Week's all about, is that we want it to happen. It's not because we should do it, it's because we want it. And I think that's our real goal.
Yeah, fantastic. And we started this conversation touching on some elements of your role and a little bit about the leadership at Ventia and what you're doing, but I can't not have you on the podcast and ask you about your leadership because you are such a successful Australian leader, particularly in your work in resources and energy. So I'd love to ask you, because your leadership style has been described to me as very empowering, but not, you know, not so empowering that it's completely hands off, that you're incredibly supportive. What do you look for in your leaders in your organization? And a second part to that question is, and for people that are listening that have leadership aspirations, what do you think that they should concentrate on in terms of their development?
Yeah, look, I suppose I like to think that we can all be accountable and inclusive. I think the two go so much together. If we want to be accountable, or if we want people to be accountable, we have to be inclusive to listen to what are the issues that they're dealing with, that accountability. How can you help and not interfere? So it's a hands-on, not a hands-in approach. Mm. I think you can only do that by being inclusive yourself and also getting out and learning and listening. You know, as the saying goes, we've got two ears and one mouth for a good reason. And it's about that, but when you're holding people accountable, it's about how you can help them be successful, and so it really relies on that. And I would encourage anybody to who's looking in terms of developing their leadership skills is to work out how they can be a coach. And we've learned a lot, you know, in our lives and with our families and in our workplace about what an effective coach is, because a coach is someone who's taking the environment that they're given and making the people in that succeed. Not necessarily trying to change the environment, not necessarily trying to change the people, but make them successful and where they are. And of course, in an organization like ours, you know, the strength of the organization is the people in the field, because they're doing. And so if you're designing and the thinking and the leadership around where the action happens, where the people who are out in the weather or in the building, working wherever they're working, you're really in touch with the organisation, and therefore your leadership is successful to the outcome.
I really liked your approach and guidance around coaching, and it is something that a lot of organisations try and do, like a coaching course for frontline leaders, or try to get people to give coaching, and more often than not it's been done because they want people to effectively be able to give people feedback in real time. Do you think that hits the mark, or do you think it needs to go further than that?
Yeah, well, certainly you need to be honest in feedback. You know, it's honest feedback is great, but it's got to come both ways. If you're not changing, by you giving feedback, if you're not changing yourself, you're not listening, and you can't be the same person. You know, the great coaches, whether they be in a sporting field or in an industrial field, are all people who change dramatically over their time in leadership roles. And that's the lesson, is how are you changing? Your credibility comes about how you can take, because you need to be credible to be a good coach. And your credibility comes from you've listened, you've heard, you've adapted, but you've also held that accountability and that inclusion for the outcome.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, we've covered quite a lot of topics. So thank you for letting us jump around and touch on all those different topics in this conversation. Tom, it's been really wonderful getting your input and feedback. So fascinating to hear about the merger and really the specifics of the bushfire response. Incredible. And of course, COVID and leadership, diversity, inclusion. Gee whiz, what else could we have covered? So thank you so much, Tom, for joining us on Resource People Podcast.
Now, my pleasure, Tara, and good luck. Take care.
So pleased to be able to share that conversation with Tom Quinn from Ventia with you today. I hope you got lots out of it. I'm Tara Diamond, and thanks for joining us on Resource People Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Resource People Podcast. We look forward to you joining us next time as we highlight the many great stories of the resources and energy industry. If you have any questions about the podcast, please email media@ama.org.au. Produced by Brad Thompson.